welcome to another edition of Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious. This is me, Robin Kerner, the original Blue Republican, and one of the best things about being in the Liberty Movement in the US is the people you meet, and the people you meet through the people that you know. And this is another first, actually, because now I'm sitting at my table where I do my interviews with two people. An old friend and a new friend, the new friend through our mutual old friend. And before I start, let me tell you a little bit about my old friend, Serena Forbes. I want to tell you about her because she's been a big support for me and for Blue Republicans since I came to Seattle. She's a big Ron Paul supporter, which is how I got to know her. And I want to give her a big plug at the top of the show because having spent, decades fighting for liberty and supporting those who have thrown their hat in the ring with time and energy and even money and donations, Serena has now thrown her own hat in the ring in the 36th district running for state senate here in Seattle, Washington. So, first off, if you are in, as I am, Seattle, Washington, make sure you vote for Serena Forbes for state senate in the 36th district, which takes in, most of downtown where I am in Magnolia, Lake Union, Ballard. Just look out for her. Serena Forbes, a lady that I am very delighted to be able to call my friend. And she has staying with her another gentleman, Thomas Helvick, who I wanted to get on the show because, if you've listened to the show recently, you know that I had a very interesting discussion with Ismaël Aouaz, a Frenchman, and he with his lovely French accent and me with my not-so-lovely British accent discussed the difference between American conceptions of liberty and British and French ones. Well, As you can probably tell from the name, can give us another perspective. He is German. And what is quite interesting is he has participated, he's been an activist, and even the founder of a small chapter, one might say, for a German city, of the PDV, which is the German party, a relatively new German party founded in 2009, whose platform was endorsed by Ron Paul. And that endorsement of their platform features quite majorly on their website. But, like so many of us who fight for liberty all over the world, not only is it an uphill struggle, sometimes it feels like we're barely off the starting line. I feel often that way about liberty in Britain, but from a brief conversation with Thomas, I think it might even be worse in Germany. Welcome to the show, Thomas, and thank you for being with me too, Serena.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So here we are. There's three of us, as I say, around the table, and I think, as I say, this is a first. So, Thomas, how old are you, and how long have you been involved in fighting for liberty in Germany, and why are you here?
So I'm 23 years old, currently on vacation in the United States, and I discovered libertarianism back in 2009 while I was serving in the German army.
Now, by the way, I just want to interrupt you. Serving in the German army in 2009, I only just discovered this, means conscripted.
Yeah.
Yes. So until what year did the Germans have conscription?
Since 3 years ago, they abolished the conscription.
Yeah, wow. I just find that astonishing. Okay, so carry on. So you were in the German army, of all things. How did you start for libertarianism as a conscript in the German army?
So I was always interested in politics, but sadly always just repeated the things what they teach us at school about government things. And there, the army, we had a lot of free time. The person who stops to script it, you don't do much. So there was a book people would call it conspiracy theory, and a friend of mine started reading it, and I was just laughing about it because, yeah, crazy people.
So what was the book about?
It was about 9/11.
Okay.
And so after he finished, he said, maybe you should read it and not just laugh about it, and you can judge afterwards. So, okay, because I had free time, I started reading his book, and after that I thought, yeah, interesting. So maybe we should not always trust the government and question some things.
Oh, the light went ding!
Yeah. And then I discovered more and more things, you know, obviously false flags, things like how Hitler started his wars, and you know, then I thought maybe it continued, like government lied to their people, and then I thought maybe it's not the best thing to trust government, and I was looking for alternatives, because all I knew back then was, if we have a problem, the government is there to solve us, to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I started to get interested in alternatives, and started reading after this first book, the one after books was Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely one of the first in the canon.
Yeah, yeah, and shortly after that, Ron Paul, which brought the like broad idea of libertarianism to me, and yeah, I saw that it might work. And
so Ron Paul's had quite an effect, even obviously outside the United States, right?
Yeah, partly. I mean, if you start looking up things on the internet and libertarianism, he pops up immediately.
Sure,
he was this
sure.
great guy in 2007. Where back then I supported Obama because I didn't know better.
But so did I. I mean, guilty.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So yeah, I started reading his books, got really into libertarianism, and now I'm like strong libertarian believer in his ideas. I was discovered also in economics, and yeah, for me, the meaning of the word liberty shifted to what it means from a lot of people in Germany to live free of worries to just. Doing their own stuff, what it means now, there's just the right to mind your own business, what means liberty now for me.
Okay, so you're saying that most Germans, if you say liberty, which is Freiheit, right? Is that
Freiheit.
To a German, they think of it in one context. You're saying they think of it in a personal context rather than as a political...
Yeah, they think, like, freedom or liberty means to live without worries, it's a good description, lifestyle.
Okay.
So
now
the
this
government
is
takes care of you if you have any problems, society will take care of you, and
so for a German, for the average German, having more liberty means probably having the government give you more welfare to make sure that you can do what you want if you are on bad times.
Yeah, sadly, that shifted to that meaning, yeah.
Well, and I think it's probably more that way than the audience to this show understands it in most of Europe. I think that's not uncommon.
An example, just 1 week ago, a famous person from the Socialist Party, she suggested a free holiday check for everyone, 500 euros. people have the right to be happy in their vacation, and this is the state of liberty in Germany.
Okay, and I thought things were bad in England. Oh my God.
Yeah, another funny thing which I would like to mention is we had this new government and a voting about minimum wage, and we have about 600 people in the parliament, and out of the 600 people, 5 voted against the minimum wage. This is the amount of common sense left in the German parliament.
Wow. You know what? Maybe this interview will serve to make my American audience feel a little bit better about liberty in America. it's always worse somewhere else, but this is interesting. Now, this is particularly interesting, it just comes to my mind, because I talk a lot about the kind of the history of liberty and, you know, the American Constitution coming out of this Anglo tradition of liberty. And of course, the Angles, the Anglo-Saxons, were German. And the Anglo-Saxons, they bring to England, as it became, the Angles, England, right, this idea of the common law. And it was a very libertarian society that they brought to England 1500 years ago. So we have the common law, we have this tradition, the Anglo tradition that, you know, you might say was distilled into the Constitution, which I'm looking at, is on my wall. It came from Germany, but Germany doesn't have a sense of its own long Anglo, wouldn't be called Anglo, but this tradition of liberty is coming out of its own land, right?
Yeah, it's sad, because we had time, Europe before the First World War was, it was so much prosperity, so much growth, so much peace, even in Germany, you have a really small government compared to today, really, really small, and people... Yeah, we are proud of being in charge of themselves, and through these 2 world wars, and like nobody can remember the what liberty means back then, and it all got more into a collectivist idea.
It's particularly interesting because obviously with the militaristic, I mean, you have Bismarck, who set up the welfare state with the purpose of militarizing and collectivizing the society. And then, of course, you had Nazism and Hitler. You would kind of think, perhaps naively, that in reaction to that history, there might be an increased desire to understand the opposite of that collectivism and that authoritarianism. And I see that we're going into the break, so we'll discuss this more when we come back. Welcome back to Blue Republican Radio. This is my second segment with my good friend Serena and my new friend Thomas from Germany. And when we went into the break, I was pondering the fact that the recent, quite modern authoritarian and collectivist history in Germany doesn't seem to have been reacted against in a manner that has made German society want to understand liberty in the way that I know many Americans want to understand liberty. But another thing that I know as a Brit, I have been exposed to in thinking about modern German history, is the idea that the European Union, a topic of much interest to libertarians everywhere, and a topic that I discussed with my French friend Ismaël in an interview that you guys can find in the archives, the idea that the EU has been essentially driven by an axis of German guilt and French fear. And certainly, and I think you could measure this in a lot of ways. I think you could certainly make a good case that the EU wouldn't be anything like it is if it weren't for that very solid, social democratic French-German alliance. Most nations in the EU, and there are 27, the overwhelming majority take money out. I haven't checked this recently, but I know that the few that put money in, I think there might even be four, net-net, Germany, Britain being number two, France, and I think there might be another one, there may be another couple. So, which raises a question. First of all, and you might not have much to say about this, and this is fine, but do you think, what impact do you think that kind of German historic guilt has in German politics and in European politics? And is it possible that that is changing as the young generation quite rightly feel no guilt for what has happened in German history?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I have people in my family which were on both sides of the war, so I can't really speak as 100% German on that, but I don't feel any responsibilities like left on my shoulders what happened in Europe during the last 100 years.
But you do hear all the time, and even now, if you just go on YouTube now and type in EU Parliament speech, right, it will not take you long to find some socialist or leftist or social democrat, basically anyone who's not a Eurosceptic, right, so two-thirds of the parliamentarians. Will only take you a minute to find a speech where they say, it's the EU that has maintained peace in Europe. And if you do not support the EU, then you are not supporting European peace. And it's the EU that is responsible for, you know, the peace that, for the contrast with our recent history. Which of course is absurd, because what the subtext is if we weren't doing this, then the Germans would be beating us up again. That's really what they're saying, which is completely ridiculous. I don't think anybody actually believes that. But that does seem to be subconsciously a driver of the European project. Do you see this play out? Maybe not in your generation, but in...
Not in my generation, but when I talk to my grandparents, they they are still they believe, or the old generation, they believe that the existence of the European Union directly caused the long peacetime we had in Europe.
That is a prevailing belief.
Yes, yes.
Now, as a young German, see, to me, I just want to laugh at that. I just think it's insane. But as a young German, what do you think about that?
I don't think that the European Union is causing peace, but a lot of people believe that it's uniting us and we more and more get rid of nation states, which really originally caused the wars.
Okay. Now, what we did talk about, Thomas, before the show, the fact that the European Union is kind of a paradigm in which, for example, the Greeks feel like the Germans are controlling them, and the Germans feel like they're being hurt by Greek laziness. Now, one might say, therefore, that the European Union is creating conflict. In fact, I would say it's obvious that it's creating conflict.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, yeah. This is exactly what happens if this through this forced unification of all countries. In Germany, the media shows, for example, Greek people as lazy because they receive all our money. And I heard incidents in Greek that they had like Merkel, like Hitler, walking through the streets and then protest because we dictate, we supposed to dictate them what they have to do to receive our money. And but in the what I think is that the saving of the euro mechanisms they implemented is to save
the European currency.
The background is that we gave money to the Greek, we the German government gave money to the Greek government is to save their own banks, which are heavily invested in Greek.
Right.
So it's, yeah.
Yeah, that's a point worth making because it's clearly true, and I don't think I've talked about it on this show. But let's be clear that the European bailouts are to serve European banks, primarily in the richest European countries.
Yeah.
And of course, it's being done by increasing debt on the people of the poorest countries in Europe.
They socialize the debt. That's what they
do. Right. That's right. Privatize the profits for the cronies.
Cronyism everywhere.
Yeah, it really is everywhere. And we have plenty of doses of it here in the United States. Now, that's interesting, though, because I think cronyism is what... Cronyism, along with the civil rights, which are being, you know, I'm sure you know, in America, being taken down, the Patriot Act, the NDAA, and this huge issue, the surveillance state and all of this, the militarization of police. Cronyism and the civil rights issue are, I think, really waking people up to the message of liberty and to what's wrong with our current political settlement in the US. In Germany, is there a similar reaction? I mean, do Germans say this isn't right, that we are impoverishing our poor neighbours for the benefit of our banks? Is there like a moral backlash against that? Or do most people not know? Or are Germans quite happy that their banks are doing fine now?
I would say they don't know what really is going on. That's the case.
Okay, so given that ignorance, another thing that I've been very interested to talk about on the show and in other speeches and stuff that I've given is the rise of the anti-skeptic vote in other parts of Europe. Now, for me, that's very exciting to see the maybe marginal but significant awakening of mainstream Britons, for example, with the rise of UKIP. Now, obviously, you had something similar going on that was harnessed, I would believe, in a much darker way with the Front National in France. Is, given the ignorance that you're speaking of here, and there's plenty of it everywhere, I mean, it certainly isn't, you know, just a German thing, but given this ignorance, is the rise of a party like UKIP unimaginable? Like a Eurosceptic party, is that unimaginable in German politics and in German society?
I wouldn't say that. We have this new party, it's called Alternative for Deutschland, Alternative for Germany, and they gained momentum in the European elections when they received 8 or 9% of the votes, and are now as a new German conservative party in the European Union, and they have some economists in their party, which are classical liberals, and they have some impact on at least bringing back conservative politics to from Germany to the European Union.
Now, that would include withdrawal of Germany from the Eurozone.
No, I think they planned a North Euro. So just pick out some countries and and let the strong European nations, Netherlands, Germany.
Right. And so, and would those nations be using the Northern Euro and the other nations using the Southern?
Yeah, something like this. But I mean, I don't think it will work.
Nobody takes
this
it seriously.
This is screwed up. This is a, it's paper money and it's suffering. What every paper money is suffering, and I think it will return to zero. Like Mises pointed it out, but the value of the money, it's you can't save it. They have some tools left they can implement, for example, Eurobonds. So I think it will survive for another while, some other years.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, this is so interesting. Very international. We are going into another break, and we'll be back soon. Thanks for being with me. Listening to Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious, and I am here with Tomas Helvik, and we're having an interesting conversation a little bit about European politics, but let's bring it back to the United States. So Tomas, what brings you to the US? And given that I'm sure you're here in and among Liberty folks and the Liberty movement, what does it feel like for you to see how we in the US, especially young people in the US, are activating now for the ideas of liberty?
Yeah, it's great. It's such a huge movement compared to Europe. You kind of feel home here. You have libertarian chapters from all kind of organizations in every city. Just go on meetup.com, look up the term libertarianism or Austrian economics, and you find a meetup and you can go there, talk to the people, get in touch. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a really, really nice time, a great time I have here, and meet really a lot of really great people. And yeah, just can say thank you to welcome someone from old Europe.
From old Europe, yes.
Yeah.
How long are you here for?
In total, I would say for 4.5 months.
Oh, really? So how can you stay that long? Are you?
So it's the gap between my bachelor and my master degree. So I finished my bachelor and will start a master in October. And the free time, I decided to travel through the United States, the homeland of libertarianism. And
great. So, are you participating in some particular liberty events? Getting involved in certain things here, or?
Yeah, I went to Porkfest and the Atlas Summit, which both were held in New Hampshire.
Live free
really
or die.
Great events. Perfect state. One of the most free states in the United States, I would say.
One of them.
Yeah. And the Free State Project is there. Met
Absolutely.
Them. Went to key into the activism. And yeah, it's just great. And like, Porkfest is it's the libertarian dream to be in this 1 week long in this paradise, just libertarian agorism. It's going on there, so many activities, it's wonderful.
Do you have any sense of whether, maybe this isn't a fair question, but do you have any sense of whether, you know, we liberty-minded types in the US, whether we're just having fun and doing all of these things and talking to each other, or whether we're actually having an impact in politics in our country, in the United States? Can you sense that?
I would say you have, compared to us, a huge impact. You have people like Ron Paul, who are in the mainstream media daily. You have other libertarians who are on television daily in several shows and several networks. You have Yeah, what is an example? For example, the Reason magazine, which would say great media outlet. We have small magazines in Germany, but not that influential.
Yeah. So do you go back to Germany a few months from now, having seen this? Will you go back invigorated or demoralized because Germany's so far behind in this respect? How does it feel?
That's difficult to say.
Yeah.
I at the moment I try to not think about European politics. Just be here on vacation and around all these liberty-minded people. Yeah, I don't know how it will be back in Germany. I mean, the small libertarian groups we have, they are growing, so it's not like 5 years ago where you were really the only one around. So you have networks and
so you would say that even in Germany, where we're so close to the starting line for liberty, there's still significant progress is being made. Would you say that?
Yeah, mostly thanks to the internet, which makes possible to connect everyone and everywhere. This is just the few libertarians we have are able to connect. This is a great thing. And
yeah. It's still too small a world. It's too easy to meet libertarians whose name you know, because there's not enough of us.
Yeah.
But hopefully that will change. That's, I think, to some extent still true in the US, but hopefully we're changing that. So let me ask you another question. Because that's kind of my job on a radio show. Do you see tyranny rising faster in the United States or in Europe? US government versus EU, the European state.
It's a different way of cronyism or tyranny. In the States, I see the militarization of the police and the brutalism of the state and how evil it really is, like, since like Guantanamo and it's going on.
Can I just say, you heard that from a German on this show. Just let that sink in. Carry on.
Yeah, this is like obvious tyranny. And in Germany, it's more hidden. And because people are not spectacles, so the state has not much to fear. It's
is that because
the state, there's no police brutality, there's no militarization of the police. Yeah, because they have nothing to fear. Nobody's armed in Europe, and that's maybe the main reason nobody's armed and everybody is believing in the state. So,
what do you think about the relationship that libertarians in the U.S. are very keen about between the Second Amendment, the right to self-defense, and liberty? Because it is a cultural anathema to a German and to a Brit, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you, like, how do you feel about that?
I think it's a great thing, and it's the main purpose of saying amendment, to defend yourself against tyranny. It's nothing to do with hunting or something. It's there to defend yourself against tyranny. And we don't have gun rights in Germany, and if you talk in Germany about the states, you always have, like, the stereotypes, somehow silly Americans shooting everything. This is
right. It's very condescending, isn't it?
Stereotype in Germany of United people from the United States.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I run a website called WatchingAmerica.com, and what we do is we compile and translate foreign opinion pieces about American politics.
I should translate your media article about all the whistleblowers, Edward Snowden, and Greenwald and Ron Paul and the Tea Party, which they wrote in German media, which was disgusting. It was horrible. It was, every line was full of hate and
even
wrong thing.
Hold on a second. Whoa.
I should translate it to your homepage to give you a view of what some people in German media write about all this libertarian stuff, which is going on here in the States.
And it's condescending and misunderstood.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is exactly why I raised it, because this is exactly what you can see. If you go to WatchAmerica.com, you can see a German it could be in Arabic or it could be in Hindi or whatever. But there is this misunderstanding about some of the things that we in the US take for granted. But one thing that... one of the reasons I'm also in the United States is it is also true that in Britain, culturally... I think we certainly don't see the militarization of the police. Again, it's like Jimmy Wooden. And I do see that in the United States, this deepening tyranny is it's getting worse very fast. And so sometimes you think that it's worse in the US than in the EU, but it's precisely because the fight back has already begun in America. I don't think that the rise of tyranny is any less here, but I think we're fighting back a lot more. So I'm more optimistic in the US than I could be in Europe. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I'm scared of like material law.
Martial law?
Martial law.
Yeah.
Martial law, yeah, but I mean there, what I saw there, executive orders for state of emergency, which they can, the state can do everything they want.
Yes, yes.
And then
you
detain people forever and stuff like this, which is all set up if in case the state lose control, and this is really frightening me about the states.
Yes, I agree.
I would say in Germany it would go on more peaceful. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And if I think if you talk about crisis or what's coming in the future, it's far from over, and maybe we face some bad times, and it could be way more brutal here in the States than in Germany. It's what I think.
I get that completely, because I do feel that, you know, here we have the Constitution and we have these great ideas, and people like Serena and other Liberty candidates running, people like Ron Paul and Rand Paul, and the Libertarian Party is becoming significant here, and all of these things. But I am less scared that, I mean, I just culturally, what the government is doing here couldn't be done in England than it sounds like in Germany, because as soon as you saw it, the people would be on the streets and they would just be laughed at. I mean, the government would be laughed at for the attempt. And there would be, I mean, it would just grind to a halt. And it's interesting. It seems that people in the US are actually a lot more compliant. In the US, people, although we have this great narrative of our founding, we have these ideas of the Constitution, I think people are much more subservient to authority here. And maybe it's because America is a victim of its own success, because we're so comfortable. We have everything we need. Maybe.
Yeah,
but there is a cultural difference. What you mentioned Snowden. Let's talk about that, because a big part of the Snowden revelations is the wiretapping of Merkel. Now, that was a big story all over the world. What did that revelation do to German perceptions of the US? And that whole story, how has that played out in Germany? And what's the German feeling right now, and German media have to say, about the rise of the, of a state that will invade anybody's privacy wherever they are?
Now, obviously, there was an outrage shortly after this information went public, but I would say people accepted it. And 2 days ago,
accepted it. And what do you mean, accepted it?
Yeah, it's nothing you could change like this. So
they kind of expected it.
Yeah, they expected it, and some German politicians stand up and raise their voice and we're, whoa, how is this possible? I thought we were friends with the United States. But I don't believe them, that they really thought that nobody's gonna wiretaping them.
Okay.
And even 2 days ago, the German media wrote about, I don't know, maybe it was worldwide, that the German Secret Service actually wiretaped some US politicians, for example, Hillary.
Mm, yes, that's right. I think I saw the headline, yeah.
So, and the German media was, oh yeah, at least we can do the same. So they're kind of proud of it, of their own secret service. Yeah.
And what did the German, how did the, I mean, again, with the history, I mean, it's still in, well, just about in the living memory of a few people.
What they're able to do and what they're doing today, this is way more than the Stasi did back in Germany. But through the new media and people, they don't care about privacy. I mean, everybody's posting everything on Facebook, so why should they care if someone else is reading their feed? I don't know. A lot of people don't care.
So would you really? So it's like it's not a big deal that the government, let's say, is collecting every email you've ever written, or you know, tapping your video Skype or something.
I mean, people don't like it, but
but they're not going to fight about it.
They're not going to fight.
See, that's interesting. So, okay, so now we get to it again. You see, it's going on in the US, but there's a hardcore and a hardening core and a growing core of American citizens who are like, enough is enough. And that's the bit that's missing anywhere in Europe, isn't it?
Yeah, but I would say your spying is really, really, really big compared to what the German in Europe, the spying that's going on in Europe. I think actually in Great Britain they were second in spying. I guess they had some progress and.
Yes, I believe that. So that's not something to be too proud of, but I do believe that GCHQ is arguably one of the most effective intelligence agencies in the world.
Yeah.
I guess they probably started doing this with the Empire. I should think they probably got a lot of practice.
So I have a question.
Yes, Serena. You've been so quiet for so long.
Well, recently I read a book that you lent to me, Robin. Written by Dan Hannan, called Inventing Freedom, a fabulous book. Everyone should read it. And it talks about the influence of the Anglosphere. And I wonder if part of this goes back to the difference between those in Europe, how they respond to their political situation versus how we respond and those in the Anglosphere respond, or specifically America, since we do have the tradition of the Declaration of Independence and our Bill of Rights, which doesn't really exist anywhere else in the world. And if that's really, is that the dividing point?
I think that speaks to...
It has to be the dividing point. Because they don't have guns. We were just yesterday at a shooting event with the Freedom Foundation, and afterwards we went by a local sportsman store which had rows and cases of firearms. Mm-hmm. And we were even showed one that was made by the Merkel firearm company, and we had no idea that Angela Merkel's family history is out of firearms. This was very interesting.
I had no idea about that.
Yeah, yeah. So
that is interesting.
So plug for Dan Hannan's book.
Yes.
But that we are so fortunate in the United States that we do have this tradition. And it seems like almost an insurmountable barrier or mountain to climb to bring this to other peoples, because they have been so inculcated. I know when I was there last summer and met Thomas, it was the first time I really spoke to my near and same age contemporary relatives about politics.
Mm-hmm.
Having known them for half of my life, to really have in-depth discussions, and it was...
Yeah.
They were intransient. They just could not see it.
Yeah. It isn't, I mean, I think one of the things that Daniel Hannan's book brings out that is so important is there's this the fundamental divide between the politics and the law of the Anglosphere and everywhere else, is that the sense has always been, going back, you know, 1500 years back, exported and forgotten by the Germans, right? That law comes up from the people. And this idea that listeners to my show and my speeches know goes back to 1,000 years this year, that government authority is justified by the protection of the rights of the people. So law does not come down, it comes up. And what comes down is to protect what comes up. So in the non-Anglist... Oh, we're going into the last break. Well, welcome back to Blue Republican Radio. This is the last short segment of the show. We've covered some interesting topics. It's always great to get the outside perspective, which of course is why I have WatchingAmerica.com. That's kind of the whole point of that. But yes, I kind of got cut off by the break, but I think we basically made the point, this idea of common law. You know, it's right there. It's we the people. You know, it's the true democracy, the demos kratos that I talk about. You know, demos kratos as something that serves liberty, rather than which we, you know, in America we're very concerned about. You know, we're a republic, not a democracy. But this idea that this comes from the people is important in the Anglo sphere, in the Anglo conception, and it is kind of unique. And indeed, if you want to find out more about this, that book that Serena mentions, Inventing Freedom by Daniel Hannan. You know what I love? I've got to say, I love that the most famous, okay, maybe the most famous British politician in the United States, probably Nigel Farage, but Daniel Hannan is definitely a decent second. Which I like that, you know, and I don't think if you ask even the Liberty Americans who David Cameron is, most of them will know who that is. He's the Prime Minister, but he's less important to Americans than is Nigel Farage or Daniel Hannan. And yeah, and that is a great book, Inventing Freedom. And by the way, Daniel Hannan's stuff, if anybody's interested in any of this, liberty in its kind of deepest, broadest sense, Daniel Hannan has a blog on the Telegraph, the Daily Telegraph, I think it's telegraph.co.uk. In obviously it's a British newspaper, always a good read, and I've not met him yet, but I will. I'm looking forward to that. So you know what, we have one, not even, we have half a minute left of this show pretty much. Serena, I would just like to invite you to plug your run for Senate here in Washington State.
Oh, well, thank you, Robin. Well, I am running in the 36th district. I'm running against a 20 plus year incumbent, Jeanie Cole Wells, who was named by the National Progressive Democrats as the most progressive Democratic senator in the state. She is the author of bills of over $24.25 billion over the next 10 years, fourth biggest spender. She's never met a tax she didn't like, knows nothing about freedom, obviously.
Check out, and your website is Serena?
SerenaForSenate.com.
Thank you to both of you for being on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Exactly.